No, I'm set. Oh, yeah, I'm actually set. So here we go. Okay, so the title of this is Topics in Distributed Ledger Technology, and I wanted to be on the title screen not only for my beautiful picture of a spider, but also to point out that this, you know, although this is a talk about blockchain, I'm not calling it blockchain in the title. I think that what's going on is more than just blockchain. I think there's a range of technologies associated with blockchain that are going to have a significant impact in the coming years. So this is the beginning of something interesting. We'll forget about blockchain, but we won't forget about distributed ledger technology. Next slide, please. So I'm going to begin with some of the core concepts. This is just to, you know, give people a baseline understanding of what blockchain is, what distributed ledger technology is. I won't dive too deep into it, but after this, you should be able to have a good understanding. Slide, please. So the first thing about blockchain is it's about data. And in the world of blockchain, they talk about assets and ledgers. Really, it could be any sort of data. I've defined it into a few different types of data. Transactions, which is what we see in Bitcoin, right? P gives X to Q. But also states, Ethereum, which is another type of digital currency, records states rather than transactions. So P has N instances of X. But also, you can include conditions or conditional statements in your data. If this, then that, or if this state is the case, then that state is the case. So think of assets or ledgers simply as data stores. Slide, please. So what we have, the first move that happens in distributed ledger technology is distributed ledgers. So normally when we think of a database, we think of it as being in one place, as being in, you know, a database on a computer. But in fact, in distributed ledger technology, the database is spread out over multiple instances. Now, there's a couple of ways of looking at this. One way is sometimes called sharding, where some data is here, some data is there, some data is there. That's not how blockchain works. In blockchain, an actual copy of the entire database is stored on each of one of however many hundred nodes. So you have a copy of the entire database, I have a copy of the entire database, someone else has a copy of the entire database. Next, please. So another major element of distributed ledger technology is the hash function. The hash function is an algorithm such that if you feed it some content on one end, it'll come out with a digest of a certain length on the other end. Now, what's really important is that it's twofold importance. First of all, if that digest is long enough, 128 bytes, say, then that digest can be reasonably knowably unique for each input. But more importantly, if you change one comma even of the input, then the digest changes. So the digest is not simply, you know, an abbreviation of the input. In fact, you cannot infer from the digest back to what the input was. But the digest is a way of making sure that the input did not change. If I give you the content and the digest, you can check my content by running the algorithm and making sure that the digest is correct. There are different algorithms for that, some old algorithms that are bad, and some newer algorithms that are more secure and more reliable and faster. Next slide, please. So, using these concepts, we can actually construct a blockchain. So a blockchain is made up of a set of blocks where each block consists of a list of data entries into our distributed ledger. So it might be a list of transactions, it might be a list of states, it might be a list of conditions, it might be a list of anything, right? So we have a list of these data entries, and then the block is chained by taking that list, adding what they call a proof of work to it, and then adding the hash of the previous block. So you've got three elements in your block: the hash, the proof of work, or the nonce, the value created as a one-time value specifically for this purpose, and then the data. So what happens is you take all of that and you hash that, and that now is going to be the input for the next block. So you see what happens here. In the next block, I have the hash of the previous block. That means you cannot change even one comma in the previous block without changing that hash. So you cannot change the previous block without people who have the next block knowing about it. So what the blockchain does is it secures the contents of the chain of blocks. The contents, as the diagram shows, might just be a list of things, or it might be organized into a tree structure, a tree of hashes, which is known as a hash tree or a Merkle tree. And of course, you can have Merkle graphs and Merkle chains, etc. So that list of blocks now is our distributed database, and everybody in the network is going to get a copy of that list of blocks. Does that make sense so far? Yep. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's exactly what they do, right? But think about it, you're only checking a string of hashes. Really easy to check. You don't need to check the data, you just need to check the string of hashes. But it's a good question, because what if you have two competing versions of that previous string of hashes? Somebody could come along, right? If they want to fake a transaction that took place a week ago, they just recreate all of those blocks, right? And then they try to convince everyone that this is the actual real blockchain and not the one you thought you had. So you have this situation where you have possibly competing blocks. This is partially why the proof of work is important. You want to make it really expensive to create this previous chain of blocks. So the proof of work requires that you do a long algorithmic calculation. Takes a lot of computer power, and it ends up costing you more than you would actually make by changing the blockchain. But this is a general instance of what's called a consensus problem, and I'll deal with that very shortly. Next slide, please. So this is the consensus problem, right? There's, now that diagram describes a bunch of different ways of achieving consensus, but the problem in general is you've got a bunch of nodes, say 100 nodes, and the 100 nodes have to agree on what the real chain of blocks is. And then you have bad actors like Norm who decide they want to rewrite the chain to benefit themselves. This is going to happen. There are bad actors out. Norm is there. We can't get rid of Norm. We might want to, but we can't, right? So dealing with this, this is known as Byzantine fault tolerance. And the idea here is that you need a system whereby, even though Norm exists, The people in the network of nodes can be reasonably sure, they can be certain that the chain of blocks that they have is the actual real recording of the transactions. So the solution proposed by Satoshi Nakamoto was the proof of work. So in order to create a block, you have to perform this computer calculation. I can talk about what that is, but it doesn't really matter what it is. It takes a lot of power. And it's used to generate this nonce, this one-time value that you insert into your block. So, and if you talk to somebody like Andre, he'll say that Bitcoin is the only true blockchain network because you have this community that's been creating blocks all the way back into, you know, the last 4 or 5 years. So it's so hard by now to recreate these blocks. It would be so expensive. It's basically impossible to change the actual value. So if you have two competing chains and you're asking yourself, which is the current up-to-date real chain? You take the chain that represents the most work. So most work equals truth in a blockchain consensus network. So that's led to people proposing other solutions that don't take up the entire power output of Norway. One alternative is called proof of stake. And basically what that involves is people investing a certain amount of money into the chain, and if they're caught cheating, they lose that stake. There are different approaches to that. There's a coin out there called Ripple, where the proof of stake is put in by a bunch of major banks. So that's one alternative. There's another one. I'm trying to remember what it's called. Anyhow, there are other mechanisms as well. One suggestion is to use as a nonce a value that can only be obtained at the time the value was created. And that's the principle behind one of our projects, which seeks to use the NRC time signal as a way of creating this nonce. But the main point here is we want to come up with a mechanism that allows all of the people in this network to know which chain is the authoritative chain. Next slide, please. So here I'm just going to go over, and that's blockchain, by the way. If you understand what I've just said, you understand the basics of blockchain. And you can talk knowledgeably about it. And really, there's nothing over and above what I've just said. There's like a wealth of details and things that are built on top of it and ways of approaching this. But that's the core of blockchain. So here are some examples of applications. I'll run through these relatively quickly because we don't have like hours for this presentation. Slide, please. So looking at blockchain, we ask, what does it deliver? And if it works, key point, then it builds the following things, right? Trust, right? We know that we've got the right data. If we have the data in a blockchain, we know that this is the real data. Consensus, and everybody agrees it's the same data. Provenance, and we have the history of all of the transactions back into the beginning. Immutability and finality. Nobody can come along and change the past. You might think that's pretty trivial, but it's not trivial because if you think about it, and here I'm actually quoting John Shannon, right? The only way really to profit from criminal activity is to change the past so that you're credited for something that you didn't do. but blockchain prevents that. And then in theory, equity, and that's only in theory, and in practice we find that's not the case so much. Slide, please. So there are a lot of obvious applications. There are payment applications. Square has released a cryptocurrency support. Gift cards, a couple of companies already launching blockchain gift cards. Financial services, the banks are all over this. They're not saying that they're all over this, but they're all over this. I mentioned Ripple, for example, and there's another currency, Stellar, which is related to the banks as well. So you got a bunch of, you know, you got hedge funds, bonds, crowdfunding, all of this. You know, for each of these, there's a number of startups based on this. Slide, please. Business networking, and here's why Ethereum is important. Blockchain just records transactions, but Ethereum records states and contracts. So you can use blockchain for what they call smart contracts. So these are contracts you put into the blockchain. Automatically, when something happens later in the blockchain, the conditional in the blockchain is kicked off. Markets, for things like paying coffee farmers, for example. Asset management, supply chain, there's a lot of work being done in supply chain. One of the people that we were talking with, one of the companies we were talking with, is a supply chain company. Shipping as well, one of the companies we're talking with is a shipping company. So you can track the provenance of something that shipped through a series of blockchain transactions. Next slide, please. Resources in industry, in agriculture, the example there is with almonds. I saw an article in the paper today, which is kind of important, the provenance of lettuce and lettuce shipments. Very important in the case of where you get E. coli on lettuce. You want to track it to the source and then be able to find out where all that lettuce went. The thing with shipments is it's sometimes a bit of a shady industry, and people don't always keep great records of where things came from. But if they're put into the blockchain, first of all, the data is entered. Secondly, the data can't be changed after the fact, even if you discover there's E. coli on the lettuce. Forestry to track the planting of trees worldwide, so the forestry companies can't say, yes, we planted 1,000 when really they planted 10. Mining, there's a popular use case about tracking the provenance of diamonds to avoid blood diamonds. And then energy is a power ledger distributed energy production and transmission. Next slide, please. Lots of uses in governments, and the illustration on the right is something that was actually produced by NRC, by IRAP. It's a blockchain representation of the grants that IRAP has given to various companies, and it's searchable and it's kept up to date. And you might think, well, big deal, that existed before. But the big deal is that now we can't change that. We've had the situation in the past where, you know, we have a change of government and the entire previous website disappears and a new website takes its place. It's always a risk in government, but when this is on blockchain, those records don't disappear just because there was a change of government, because it's distributed among all the different nodes, which would include non-government nodes. So there's a variety of ways this could be used. I talked yesterday, the day before, at the College of Physicians and Surgeons Conference about records for drug dispenses, records for tracking conflict of interest, you know, payments from medical companies to practitioners, etc. All of these are applications. There are instances of shipping registries, data registries, medical records, etc. Slide, please. Do jump in anytime you have a question. So those are some of the major applications, and obviously I've condensed a vast field into a few short minutes. The next thing is the thing everybody talks about are the different coins that are out there. So this is going to be a quick summary of some of the major coins. Next slide, please. First one is Bitcoin. You've all heard of Bitcoin, created by Satoshi Nakamoto, whoever that is, or whoever they are. We don't know who they are. I talked about it being distributed among hundreds of nodes. In Bitcoin, there are currently 115,000 nodes. Each node connects to eight other nodes. The state is represented by the transaction outputs. Excuse me. Now, proof of work is slow, cumbersome, and expensive. So around the Bitcoin network, there has been developed what they call a second layer or level two solution called Lightning, where the transactions occur off to the side. You do all your transactions and then you register them in Bitcoin. So what you do, right, is at the beginning of whatever you're going to do, you make a Bitcoin transaction to commit the funds. Then you do all of your transactions, and then at any time, people in this Lightning network can go back and recommit the current state of whatever the Lightning transactions were. Think of it as like a poker game, right? You could play poker with, you know, stacks of dollar bills on the table. Risky, to say the least. So what people do is they take their stack of money, they go to the wicket, they buy chips. They use the chips to bet with. At any time, people can take their chips, go exchange it for cash. Lightning works exactly the same way. Any level two solution will work in that way. So you're using the blockchain network as the base, but then, you know, a chip type of network for the actual transactions. Much faster, gazillion times faster. Next slide, please. Ethereum is the second major type of coin. As the slide says, Bitcoin might be the digital gold, but Ethereum is the silicon. And the reason for that is, of course, because it can store states, including conditionals, which are stored in what are called trees, T-R-I-E. That's not a typo. I forget off the top of my head what it stands for, but it's like a transaction record in Ethereum. No, I'm just making that up. But it's, again, it's a type of Merkle graph. It's a hashed together graph. Anyhow. Ethereum was founded by Vitalik Buterin, who's a real person. There's a language called Solidity. Solidity is a programming language used to create the smart contracts that are then stored in Ethereum. Using Solidity, you can create what are called decentralized applications, or dApps, which use the Ethereum blockchain as the core, and then are used for all kinds of things. One of the famous dApps is CryptoKitties, where images of cats are created and then bought and sold through this network. Some of these CryptoKitties have now been priced in the tens of thousands of dollars, which is really ridiculous and shows how much money people are just willing to throw away on this system in order to prove the point. Slide, please. Ripple and Stellar, as I mentioned, are supported by the banks. The idea here is that because it's a distributed system rather than a transactional system, something like Ripple and Stellar networks can be used to replace the existing system of SWIFT financial transactions. SWIFT, of course, is the system that you use if you're doing international monetary transfers. Instead, the banks want to do this using Ripple. So there's consortiums that have been brought together in order to do that. Interledger is a protocol that sits on Ripple, and it's being developed as a web standard by WC3. So I find that very interesting, this relation between the World Wide Web Consortium and Ripple. Slide, please. Yep. Because it's the value proposition, right? So there's consensus, there's trust. This is a proof of authority type of consensus. So there's a limited number of partners who can actually put transactions in. So because it doesn't depend on proof of work, it's very fast, and at the same time, it's secure. So it addresses weaknesses in the Swift system. Slide? Okay, you got it. Another major part of the infrastructure around coins are things like wallets, exchanges, and networks. A wallet is a personal application. It might be a digital application, or it might be a physical object with digital storage. That's where you keep your coins. And one of the great stories that goes around are stories about lost wallets or wallets where people have forgotten their passwords and they have hundreds of thousands now of dollars worth of bitcoins in these wallets that they can't access, which I think is hilarious personally. So there are centralized wallets, exchanges are mechanisms of trading one coin for another coin or buying coins with dollars, because you have to get them somehow, right? So you access or you buy coins through a coin exchange. So there are centralized coin exchanges like Coinbase. Coinbase is huge. It's like a multi-billion dollar company now. And then there are decentralized exchanges like Altcoin. A decentralized exchange works very similar to a decentralized network. So you have nodes, you access a node, you do your exchange, the information about that exchange is transmitted to other nodes. So there are also first stage, very preliminary stage projects at work in order to create interoperability between the different blockchain networks so that Bitcoin, Ethereum, Stellar, Ripple, and the other several hundred or thousand coins that are out there can all interoperate together. Next slide, please. So, on top of all of this, have been built a number of platforms and services, and now we're getting into some really interesting stuff. Slide, please. One of them is Hyperledger Fabric. This is an IBM project. It's the consensus model is a proof of authority model. So it's not open. It's not distributed in the sense that anybody can join it. Nonetheless, it has all the working parts of a distributed ledger system. In Hyperledger Fabric, you build your data model. The data model defines the information that you're going to store in Hyperledger Fabric, and then you construct your nodes and you share information between the nodes based on this data model. So it's being aimed predominantly at business. IRAP thing was built on Hyperledger. I'd have to check that, but I believe it was. And you basically, you create a business network, which is a set of model files, access control, and then a set of JavaScript files that actually execute the transactions. It's actually pretty lightweight, but it's done by IBM, so. Next, please. Arc is, as I say, a secure platform designed for mass adoption that will deliver the services that consumers want and developers need. Basically, it's a blockchain network in a box. Using Arc, you can launch your own blockchain network. Oh, all of the sound went off because somebody muted. I guess that was what Jean-Francois just did, and all the background noise just disappeared, which is kind of cool. I assume you can all still hear me. If you can hear me, please put a thumbs up. Okay, great. So, yeah, Arc, the WordPress of crypto, right? And then on top of that, there are Arc desktop wallets, and then on top of that are the Ledger Nano S wallet, and you can see a picture of one there, only $99. This is where the real money's being made. Slide, please. Truffle, this is an NRC example. Oh yeah, right, the one that we built was built on Truffle. Truffle, again, is basically a blockchain design kit. It's a development framework for Ethereum. Truffle is the network. Ganache is the application that you use to actually build the blockchain. And then Drizzle is a set of front-end libraries so that you can add surfaces, interfaces, etc. to it. And that's what we use to build ours. It's one of the things I have on my list of things to play with once I get my computing environment sorted out. Next slide, please. This one's really interesting. Interplanetary file system and interplanetary linked data. These aren't blockchain networks specifically, but they're using the same technology as blockchain, including the hashing, the Merkle chains, and all the rest. The only thing they don't really have are Merkle chains, but they're not designed to record transactions per se. They're designed to store data. So we have basically a distributed network, a lot like BitTorrent, where you have a single file, but it's actually available from any one of hundreds of nodes, and you just access that file from the closest node, which might sound really, really dangerous. But what IPFS does, and there's a couple of other systems that do the same thing, and I'll be talking about this in a couple of weeks at that conference. So you take your file, whatever it is, you run that file through a hashing algorithm, just like the one I talked about before. That hashing algorithm produces a hash or a digest of that file that you put in. Now what IPFS does is it turns around, it makes that hash the address of the file that you've just hashed. So in other words, it's a type of content addressability. Now, for those of you who are into data storage, network data storage, graph networks, etc., content addressability is a big deal, right? You don't need registers and things like that anymore. But more to the point, now, when I ask for a file from IPFS, again, I don't know where I'm getting it from, I ask for it by this address. I ask for it by hash. So if you think of, you know, normally we have a URL. In this case, I have 128-byte string, which is the hash. So I ask for that. I get a file. So did I get the real file or did I get a virus? Well, what I do is I take the file I just got, I run it through the hashing algorithm, because everybody has the hashing algorithm. If the result of a hashing algorithm matches the address, then I know for certain that the file that I got was the file that I expected, because you can't change even one comma of that file without changing the hash. So I've got a distributed, decentralized data network, which I think is pretty darn cool. So the concept that I'll be introducing in a couple of weeks is something called CARE, Content Addressable Resources for Education, where we do this, but we do this for open educational resources. And I'll actually be launching the world's first CARE and the world's first CARE package and introducing people to CareNet when I introduce them to eLearning 3.0, because this is at the core of eLearning 3.0. Interplanetary linked data, same thing, except for data. And I might add as well, we're still in the world where we think of stuff on the web as documents, but stuff on the web is increasingly programs, especially JavaScript and CSS and things like that. So interplanetary linked or interplanetary file system is a way of accessing not just, you know, articles, pictures, videos, or whatever, but it's a way of accessing actual computer programs as well. So you download your learning application from IPFS from this distributed network. Next slide, please. I'm going to wrap up with some issues of this whole blockchain concept, because it's not without critics. Something went weird with my phone, so I'm just checking, but we're okay. So next slide, please. First of all, there's a set of conceptual issues. I don't know why that's blank. Maybe advance that. Oh, crap. Okay. So the version you have, that's all you have. Is it on my set? No, it's not on my set either. Okay. So, but... give me a second. Oh, it's not going to load fast enough because it's NRC internet right now. Okay, conceptual issues. Some of the conceptual issues are, does the world want a decentralized network? What about anonymity on this decentralized network? Is it too anonymous? What about centralization? Because especially with something like proof of work, what we've seen is that these networks tend to become very centralized very quickly. And in fact, only a small number of nodes are the ones producing new blocks even now, because it's so expensive to produce a new block. So these are some of the conceptual issues of blockchain and Bitcoin. Next issue is cost and energy consumption. I mentioned before about Bitcoin taking up the entire electricity output, the equivalent of the entire electricity output of countries like Norway. This is not an exaggeration. And places like Quebec, which have abundant low-cost energy, are finding that the proliferation of Bitcoin mining operations is creating a real stress on energy prices. Meanwhile, in China, where a lot of mining operations take place, they use coal to generate electricity, a lot. And so there's a significant environmental cost to the production of proofs of work in the blockchain network. Next slide, please. Social and ethical issues. I have one subheading under there in my big blockchain document, bro culture. Blockchain is basically a techno-libertarian anarchist approach to finance, government, etc. And that raises a host of social and ethical issues. It's not simply whether blockchain could enable criminal activities, although it certainly enables criminal activities. It's the question of whether we want a network like this, basically managing and controlling large aspects of public services, which is where the trend is headed now. Next slide. Oh, and that's it. So I could spend the entire talk talking about the social and ethical issues. If I had more notes, I would have been able to do it more. But there's a lot of open questions here. So that's basically the blockchain talk. I hope you found that useful.